Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to the show. Well, this week we have some kids' programs. These are the shows that kids would hear after school, after the women's programs had ended for the day on radio. So these were on until around 5, 6, you know, about dinner time. We're going to have Buck Rogers of the 21st Century. This is the origin show. This is from 1939. We'll follow that episode, or several episodes, in fact, of Dick Tracy. So now Buck Rogers.
Buck Rogers in the 25th Century.
Buck Rogers is back on the air. Buck and Wilma and all their fascinating friends and mysterious enemies in the super scientific 25th century. This program is brought to you by the makers of Popsicle, Fudgicle, and Creamsicle, those delicious frozen confections on a stick. Now I have a swell surprise for you. The famous winner of the typical American boy contest has now become Popsicle Pete. And here's a message from him.
Hello, everybody. I sure am glad to meet you. And boy, am I glad I was picked to be the typical American boy. Because now I'm Popsicle Pete. I always wanted to be on the radio, and now I have a chance to tell you about some wonderful presents you can get free. Gee, you ought to see them. Hundreds of them. You get them just for saving bags from Nifty Popsicle, Fudgicle, and Creamsicle. Some gifts, even better than Christmas. You can get a wristwatch, a movie camera, table tennis, a wallet, a doll. Gee, lots of gifts. Just save the bags from Popsicle, Creamsicle, and Fudgicle on a handy stick. Boy, do they taste good.
Wholesome, too, and nourishing. Made fresh every day of the finest ingredients. The biggest 5 cents worth anywhere.
And say, kids, get the free illustrated Popsicle gift list at your ice cream store. A free coupon comes with it, worth 10 bags.
And now for Buck Rogers and his thrilling adventures 500 years in the future. As you probably know, Buck was born right here in our own times, in this 20th century. And the story of how he got started on his amazing adventures so far in the future is mighty interesting. But instead of telling you about it, let's turn the dial that'll project us ahead in time and find out all about it that way. Now, the capital of 25th century America is Niagara. And there it is that Dr. Huer, the great scientist, has his marvelous laboratory. In one room of it, he's working on a strange-looking device that sends a peculiar greenish light down onto a human figure lying on a table before him. Shall we join him there? Okay, then, here we go, 500 years into the future.
The ray is putting you to sleep. To sleep. Relax and sleep. 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 Good. The ray's had its effect. Now I can go ahead. Yes, come in. Oh, hello, Wilma.
Hello, Dr. Huer. My, why don't you have more light in here? Coming in from outside, I can hardly see a thing in this spooky greenish glow.
Part of a little experiment I'm conducting.
Oh.
But tell me, have you seen anything of Black Barney here in Niagara?
Why, no. Hasn't given up his job of Prime Minister on Mars, has he?
Oh, no. But one of his Martian rocket ship factories has worked out a new control device for me. I rather hoped he'd get here with it today.
Oh.
Meantime, I've made ready for a final test of this little invention here. Like to stay and see it?
Oh, I'd love to, Doctor, and you know it. But I just dropped in to find out if you'd seen any sign. Oh.
What's the matter?
Doctor, what's happened to him?
Eh?
Is he all right? Doctor!
I see.
What's happened to him? Why is he lying here on the table?
Don't worry, Wilma.
Don't worry? Doctor, what are you...
He has offered to be the subject of my test. That's all.
But then, why is he...
He's simply lying here, comfortably asleep, under the influence of my electrohypnotic ray.
Oh, I was afraid something had happened to him.
Not a thing. Surely you don't think for a minute that I'd do anything
to... No, of course not. But the electrohypnotic ray... Are you sure this experiment won't hurt him in any way?
Oh, absolutely sure.
Well, you can't blame me for being a little shocked for a minute. But what's that thing up near his head that looks like a miniature power plant with a loudspeaker on top of it?
That, Wilma, is my latest scientific achievement. my newly perfected electro-hypno-mentalophone.
Your what?
Well, you remember the mentaloscope, don't you?
Sure. When you put a person under the mentaloscope, all his memories showed up on a sort of moving picture screen.
That's right. And this is an adaptation of it.
Oh.
With this, the electro-hypno-mentalophone, the memories of the subject will come to us verbally, through the loudspeaker here. Provided, of course, that my calculations have been correct.
Sort of read a person's mind aloud, you mean?
Yes, yes, that's it exactly.
Where do you ever get ideas for things like this, Dr. Hewer? Surely people don't just barge in and ask you to work them out.
Hardly. The scientific research and experimentation that led up to the development of this machine was started way back in the 20th century.
Why, I always thought that the people back in the 20th century weren't much better than savages in what they knew about scientific things.
Oh, not at all, Wilma. Oh, we owe a great deal to the scientists of those days. Were it not for the groundwork laid by men like Einstein, Fitzgerald, Compton, Millikan, and the rest, we'd be without a great many of the things we have today.
They never really got anywhere with rocket ship development or anything like that, though, did they?
Well, successful rocket flight depends on two things that have been brought into existence only recently.
One of them must be inertron.
Yes, inertron. The material that defies gravity and makes it possible to lift a big spaceship off the Earth and away from its terrific gravitational pull without too much waste of power.
And what's the other?
Impervium. The only metal capable of withstanding the high temperature of rocket blasts for any length of time.
Oh.
But now, let's go ahead with this experiment.
Yes, let's. And you can tell me how this apparatus works as we go along, just what it does to them.
Well, not very much to tell you about the apparatus itself, Wilma. Except that here, in this little pad under his head, is an extremely sensitive and high-frequency response piezoelectric oscillator of quite complicated design.
Yes, I guess so.
Yes. And I've succeeded in tuning it to receive the minute electronic impulses that emanate from his brain.
Yeah.
Through the medium of a super-radiating protonoformer.
Oh, yes, what?
In other words, we're able to obtain sufficient amplification of the impulse output to register audibly through a process of thermionic note magnification. That's all there is to it.
I think I'll understand it better when I see this thing work.
I shall be very much disappointed if it doesn't.
Oh, don't you worry about that, Doctor. Your inventions always work.
I have been rather lucky in most of my experiments, haven't I?
Lucky?
Well, now let's proceed with this one.
All right. Anything I can do to help?
No, thanks. First of all, we'll have to switch in the electroniformer.
Gives the electroniformer a sort of eerie sound.
Yes. And now, when I switch on this microphone and speak to him, my words will be registered directly on his brain. Not through his ears, you understand, but directly on his brain.
Uh-huh.
And if we're successful, we'll receive his subconscious response through the loudspeaker.
Go ahead, Doctor.
Now, young man, what is your name? I said, what is your name?
Buck Rogers.
Wilma, it works.
But, Doctor...
My invention's a success.
But Doctor, what happened?
It works even better than I thought it would.
He didn't move his lips, though. And how could we hear him talk if he didn't move his lips?
It read his mind aloud, Wilma. It read his mind aloud.
It sounded like his real voice, though.
Well, of course. Because he thinks of speech in the same manner that he utters it.
Great day, it doesn't seem possible. Ask him some more questions.
Yes, yes, by all means. Listen. Buck, you were born back in the 20th century, were you not?
Yes, sir. But this is the 25th century.
Do you see, Wilma? His memory's preserved intact.
May I ask him a question?
Surely. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Buck. Buck, how did you happen to come to the 25th century?
One day in the year 1919, I was in the lower workings of an abandoned mine near the city of Pittsburgh.
Yes?
All of a sudden, the supports that held up the walls and ceiling gave way and the whole thing caved in on me.
Yes?
Some kind of peculiar gas was released. It put me to sleep. It kept me in a state of suspended animation for 500 years. Then the ground shifted and let in fresh air, and I woke up.
Well, how did you know you were in suspended animation for 500 years?
Instead of the year 1919, it was the year 24-something. To be exact, it was 24...
How did you know what year it was?
I was told about it by Lieutenant Wilma Deering. A beautiful girl soldier I met when I first met.
Oh, then you knew Wilma Deering.
Oh, I certainly do. She's the finest and bravest girl who ever lived. Why, Wilma...
Buck Rogers?
Yes?
Did you Did you find anything new and different when you first came into the 25th century?
Oh, a great deal, thanks to Dr. Hewer.
Dr. Hewer?
The greatest scientist who ever lived.
What's this?
Nowhere in the universe is there a scientist who's done so much good for humanity or done anything that can even...
Wait a minute, Buck.
Yes?
Just forget Dr. Hewer and go on with what you were saying.
But he's the man who invented the first rocket ship that took us to the moon. And it was that trip that proved the practicability of interplanetary flight.
Practicability of interplanetary flight? Nothing wrong with this machine, Doctor.
Where else have you gone by rocket ship, Buck?
First to Mars, where we helped King and Aldo put down an invasion by the Martian tiger men.
Yes?
Then to Saturn and the Saturnian moons, Venus, Jupiter, and even far-off Pluto.
Which planet did you find most interesting?
Well, that's hard to say. Jupiter has the biggest field for exploration simply because it's so much larger than the rest of the planets.
Very true. Do you expect to do any more rocketing around through outer space?
Well, there's nothing else I'd rather do, sir.
Well, Wilma, do you like my little contraption?
Oh, it's wonderful, Doctor. I told you it would work.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to ask Buck before I turn off this green ray?
Let's wake him up and see if he remembers anything that happened during the experiment.
All right. Go ahead.
All right. Come on, Buck. Wake up.
Huh?
I say, wake up. You've been asleep.
Asleep?
Uh-huh.
Oh, hello, Wilma.
Hello.
Hey, where'd you come from? What are you doing here?
I've just been let in on the test of Dr. Hewer's electro...
Electro-hypno-mentalophone.
Yeah.
Oh, and doggone it. Instead of helping you with your test, I fell asleep. Say, I'm awfully sorry, Doctor.
Sorry?
Oh, yes, sir. I was going to help
Buck,
you...
I put you to sleep with this machine.
Oh, really?
Yeah, right.
Well, I guess that's one on me, then. How'd it work?
Even better than I expected.
Oh, good.
Oh, it was marvelous, Buck. You told us your whole life history without even opening your mouth.
Hey, now, wait a minute.
it's all right, Buck. You didn't say a single thing you shouldn't have.
Oh, thank goodness for that. Let's put Wilma under it.
Oh, no, you don't.
Oh, you have to do something for excitement around here. Come on, Wilma.
Oh, you're never satisfied unless there's something exciting going on, are you, Buck?
Well, it's not as bad as all that, Doctor, but... things have been sort of slow around here lately. And...
wait until we start making tests of the new type of gyrocosmic relative aid I've just devised.
A new one?
Isn't that the equipment on a rocket ship that makes it possible to take off without much loss of time for pickup?
That's right. And without the usual physical effects of too quick acceleration. It removes from your ship the normal effects of weight and inertia and momentum and the like.
Well, how have you improved the relative aid, Doctor?
Huck, if this new instrument does what I hope it will... there'll be practically no limit to the speed of a rocket ship immediately upon taking off.
Good night. Imagine getting into the control cabin, opening the power lever, and going a couple of thousand miles an hour just like that.
That's exactly what we'll be able to do, Wilma.
Boy, that hardly seems possible, does it? But when can we test it out, Doctor? Have you already got it installed on a rocket ship?
No, Buck. As a matter of fact, I don't even have it yet.
Huh?
Oh, it's been made up all right. The one we'll use for the test, but it isn't right here yet.
I don't understand, Doctor.
Well, yes, sir. Can't we get it here? The sooner we can get it and start trying it out, the sooner we can break the monotony of just sitting around here
Wait.
Doing...
Wait, Buck. Listen.
Yes, Doctor. I hear it, too.
Oh, yeah.
Hear it?
Yes, sir. But what under the sun is it?
Look here, out of the window.
Look, heaven's Wilma. And it's coming right down this way. Wilma!
Say... Buck's wish for excitement certainly came true in a hurry. Great day. I wonder what that was. And I certainly hope he and Wilma and Dr. Hewer are all right. What do you say, Pete?
Well, I know what would make me feel all right. A great big frozen fudgicle. Jiminy, can you imagine anything better than that fresh, creamy chocolate fudge frozen ice cold on a stick?
Fellas and girls, what's the best, purest, biggest nickel's worth you can get? Right, a fudgicle. Delicious and full of healthful energy. Made only from pure milk products. Swell to eat and easy to digest. And don't forget to save the bags for those wonderful free prizes. Exciting gifts like cameras, dolls, sweatshirts, gorgeous jewelry, and lots of other things.
Now listen, kids. Be sure to get your free popsicle gift list at your ice cream store. Don't take no for an answer.
Thank you.
And that was Buck Rogers, the origin show from 1939. Well, now we have three episodes of Dick Tracy, but it's all one show. It's called The Case of the Poisonous Timber, and what we've done here is we've collapsed them into one 30-minute program. So here's Dick Tracy. Enjoy.
And now, Dick Tracy! This is Dick Tracy on The Case of the Poisonous Timber. Stand by for action. Let's go, men. Yes, it's Dick Tracy, protector of law and order.
We'll join Dick Tracy in just 70 seconds, gang. But first, did you know that today, December 16th, is the anniversary of one of the most famous parties in history? Well, not exactly a party, but in the year 1773, 174 years ago today, the American colonists held the Boston Tea Party. We've all heard about it, of course. The reason for it was this. At that time, the colonies belonged to Great Britain, and the British government made the colonists pay a tax on just about everything they sent to America. The American merchants refused to buy unless the taxes were lifted, and they finally were lifted on everything but tea. So the colonists refused to permit any tea to be landed. But in November 1773, two ships loaded with tea were moored in Boston Harbor, and an attempt was made to get the tea ashore. On December 16th, 60 men disguised as Indians boarded the ships, tore open the hatches, and overboard went the tea, and that was the Boston Tea Party, a victory against taxation without representation. Under our present system of government, we Americans are assured that we'll never be taxed without having something to say about it. And now, Dick Tracy. Dick Tracy and Pat Patton are investigating the illegal cutting of Christmas trees, the sudden disappearance of the suspected Forrest Green, and murder. Yesterday, together with Cutter Down, they carried the dead body of Pierre the Trapper from the snow-clad North Woods into a makeshift cabin and notified the local sheriff of the killing. And then Dick Tracy and Pat Patton went to Mahogany's cabin to interrogate her in connection with the mysterious occurrences. Well, Mahogany protested Forrest Green's innocence and was making some pretty strong accusations concerning Cutter Down. And suddenly Tracy said,
"Hold it, Pat."
"What is it, Dick?"
"Somebody's coming. I just saw him break for cover across that patch of open snow. Better have your gun ready."
"Right. What are you fellas fixing to do, huh?"
"Nothing serious. We just want to ask a few questions. Pat, you cover that side of the door. I'll watch this."
"All set."
"Here he comes."
"Lock the door and skedaddle, Forrest. Them two constables from the big city's here."
"After him, Pat."
"I can't open the door. It's locked."
"Yeah, and the windows look too small to squeeze through. Where's the key to open this door, Mrs. Hogany?"
"Key? Oh, let's see now. Where on earth is it? You know, I can't seem to rightly remember where I put the consarn thing."
"Dick, shall I break the door down?"
"No, never mind, Pat. He's probably out of sight by now, and it's certain we'd never catch him in these woods. He knows them like the palm of his hand."
Key. Now, where in thunderation did I put it? Oh, my.
Mrs. Hogany."
"Oh, don't be so formal, young man. Just call me Ma Hogany, like everybody else."
"All right, Ma. Would you mind sitting down for a few minutes?"
"No, not at all, sonny, not at all." "Well, what's on your mind?"
"You know I could have you arrested, don't you?"
"Yep, I suppose you could at that, but I don't know as that'd do you much good. I'm just an old lady trying to see that right and justice is done. I ain't a troublemaker by nature."
"But what I'm trying to tell you is that you can't set yourself up above the law."
"There's others what's trying to."
"Well, I'm not very good at riddles. Who's trying to set himself up above the law?"
"Shucks, sonny, looks like as how there's a heap you don't know about."
"It looks like as how there's a heap that none of us knows about."
"That's right. I think this is as good a time as any to get the answers to a few questions."
"Sit down, boys. Go on, sit down."
"All right."
"Thanks."
"Now then, what do you want to know?"
"First, why are you trying to protect Forrest Green?"
"Because he's a good boy. Mite hot-tempered, but still a good boy.
Well, if that's so, why won't he come forward and tell his side of the story?
Because it's his word against Cutter Downs. Cutter's got everything on his side.
Just a minute. Are you trying to say that Cutter Down is deliberately trying to pin something on Forrest Green?
He's not trying to, Sonny. He's pinned it.
Well, that all sounds kind of silly to me. After all, why would a big landowner like Cutter Down go to all the trouble and expense of trying to frame one of his own employees?
I can answer that one by saying that Cutter ain't a big landowner.
He ain't. Isn't. Well, these lumber holdings are enormous.
They sure are, Buster. They sure are. Only they ain't his'n.
Well, whose and are they?
Mine.
Yours?
Yours!
Yep. And when I die, they'll belong to Piney Woods.
All right, officer. Put away that billy club. I'll go quietly.
Now, let me get this straight. You say that all of this land belongs to you?
Just as sure as you're a foot high.
But why does Cutter Down do the lumbering?
He works this here land on a long-term lease.
Oh, a long-term lease? Well, that should bring you in an awful lot of money. Why
do I live in a shack like this?
Uh-huh.
Well, $500 a year won't buy much better.
$500 a year?
Uh-huh.
Oh, come now. A lease to all this land should bring a lot more than that.
That's the spitting truth. But it don't.
But how did you ever happen to sign a lease for such a small amount of money?
I never signed it. My husband, poor old Beaver Hogany, he signed it, God rest his soul.
But why?
Well, tell you, it's like this. Beaver, he owned this here land for years. Got it from an Injun. Well, he could never pay no taxes, and the state, they wanted to take it away. But Beaver, he just went gunning for the tax collectors, and so nobody never bothered to do nothing.
You know, that's an interesting way to solve the tax problem.
Yeah, trouble is, tain't permanent. The state finally offered the land up for sale, and poor old Beaver, well, he figured as how he was up against it. And that's where Cutter Down come in.
Oh, I see. He bought the land at auction, huh?
You know, if you'd unplug your ears, you'd hear me say that Cutter never bought this land. Nope. He went to Beaver and offered to pay all the taxes if Beaver would lease him the land for 25 years. He told Beaver that they'd both be ahead that way. Beaver, he could still live here and get money on the lease, and Cutter, well, he didn't want nobody running the price up on him in an auction.
I see, I see. And so Beaver accepted the offer.
In a pig's eye, he did. He said 500 was too low, and he'd like to throw Cutter into the creek.
Yeah, but I
patience,
thought...
Patience, son, patience. Cutter talked Beaver into going into the lumber business with him, and then he paid part of the taxes and talked the state into holding off the sale for a while.
Then how did Beaver ever happen to sign the lease?
Well, that I don't rightly know. A little while after they went into business, Beaver and Cutter went up to bust up a log jam on the North Fork, just above Smoky.
North Fork?
Mm-hmm.
Say, isn't that where they had the jam this afternoon?
Yep, that's right. Beaver must have got a hold of a bad fuse or something, because a whole box of dynamite went up in his face. First thing I knowed, Cutter come back and told me I was a widow and showed me the signed lease. Said Beaver changed his mind just before he went on that last trip.
Was the lease witnessed?
Yep, by Cutter's business manager, Owen Doe, and a lumberjack named Axe or something or other.
Oh, the one who was killed in the jam this afternoon?
The same. Well, anyways, I was glad to have even 500 a year then. I had to take care of my little granddaughter, Piney, being as how her parents had just died in a cabin fire. Yep, I lost my husband and my only daughter a week apart.
Well, you certainly had a bad time of it.
I'd have had it worse, but somehow Piney come through the fire alive. Yeah, she was 5 years old and wandering through the snow alone when a trapper found her, took her to his cabin. After she was strong enough, he brought her back here to me. Yep, we've always felt mighty grateful to that there trapper.
Well, I should think you would.
His name was Pierre.
Oh, no.
The one who...
The same. Oh, Piney, she was broke up something terrible when she heard what happened. She's been out walking in the woods alone, trying to get over it. Now, is there anything else you young fellas would like to know?
Not at the moment. I think you've been through enough for the time being. We'll be running along now.
Well, anytime you want to know anything, you know where I live.
Thanks. But I think it's only fair to tell you that we're still out to catch Forrest Green. As long as he stays in hiding, he's a fugitive from justice.
Well, he may be just that, but he's also still alive. So you two sprouts, have yourselves a good time and go looking for him. I got a lucky silver dollar, says you don't catch him.
Well, if I were a betting man, I'd take that. Goodbye.
Goodbye, boys. Oh, I just remembered where I left my key. It's in my pocket.
You know, I wish I had that kind of a memory.
Goodbye, Mrs. Hart.
Just call me Ma, son. Mahogany.
All right, goodbye, Ma. Well, Richard, what do you think now?
Pat, I'll be hanged if I know what to think.
You know something? For once, your intuition was working overtime. There seems to be plenty about Cutter Down that could stand looking into
it. There certainly is. And yet, you know, Mahogany is an eccentric old woman. There's no telling how much truth there is in that story of hers.
No, we can't be positive, but it sounded pretty strange.
I know it did, but you know how warped a mind can get when it starts to brood over a fancied injustice. Why, the most improbable things eventually get all mixed up with the truth.
Well, yes, I know, but you were the
one... Don't look up, Pat, and just keep acting natural, but we're being trailed.
Trailed? By whom?
I can't tell yet. Someone picked us up right after we came out of Mahogany's. First, I thought it was my imagination, but I've noticed him three times since.
Well, if you've noticed him three times, that doesn't sound like the best shadowing I've ever heard of.
I'm not so sure, Pat. It may be better than we think.
Oh, now, look, Richard, please don't go off on a mysterious kick again. Go on, explain yourself.
I've got a funny feeling that whoever it is wants us to see him.
Wants us to? What for?
We'll soon know. There he goes, up toward the top of the ridge.
I see him now. A big fella in lumbering boots with a Mackinaw turned up around his face. There he goes into that little thicket.
Okay, Pat, let's go.
Up there, after him? But it may be a trap.
I'm sure it is, but as I've said before, you'll never know what a trap is unless you walk into it.
So they wrote in the obituary column, he was a gay, mad, impetuous lad. It's too bad he died young. Look, Richard, has it ever occurred to you that someday even I may not be able to save you?
Frankly, it hasn't, Pat. I have complete faith in you.
Oh.
Did our friend come out on the other side of that thicket?
No, I don't think so. I also don't think I can climb any higher up this slope without jet propulsion.
Oh, it's not so bad. Just straight up. Just keep thinking that
Dick.
The...
Dick, look out!
In a moment, we'll return to Dick Tracy. But first... Have you ever wondered how come ABC's comic team, Abbott and Costello, worked together so smoothly? Well, you have only to look back to their early days in vaudeville. When they first began, vaudeville was in the condition where audiences had a habit of interrupting the act in question, and if some act appeared that was not very good, the audience showed disapproval in, shall we say, tangible forms, such as throwing vegetables. Well, this experience taught Abbott and Costello that the comedy act had to be good, and their act had to be funny. And yet, for all their years of experience, Abbott and Costello are young in years. Their theatrical experiences began when they were both at tender ages. After touring every large city, plus the tank towns, Abbott and Costello landed in the big time, and from there went on to radio, where they delighted millions of listeners who liked their humor on the Abbott and Costello scale. Without fail, Abbott plays the straight man to Costello's clowning, and whenever possible tries to make him the fall guy, which people eat up. Take your laughs the easy way by listening to the Abbott and Costello Show, which is on the air every Wednesday night on most ABC stations. And now back to Dick Tracy.
Dick, look out, up the mountain.
I see him. The giant fog rolling straight down on us.
Are Dick Tracy and Pat Patton all right? Or have they been caught in that landslide? Better be sure to tune in tomorrow for The Adventures of Dick Tracy, written for radio by John Ray and Everett S. Crosby. And this is George Gunn speaking. The various countries of the world may have a difficult time understanding each other's customs, but there's one thing that every nation understands about another. It's music. Great music, the kind the Boston Symphony Orchestra presents. This famous orchestra plays the music of all lands, the works of composers in America or Great Britain, in France, Germany, Russia, Poland, Italy, and Norway. Music has always played an important role in portraying the national life and culture of a nation, and so by hearing a country's finest music, one is better able to understand that particular land. So don't miss the Boston Symphony on the air tonight on most ABC stations. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
And now, Dick Tracy!
This is Dick Tracy on the case of the poisonous timber. Stand by for action. Let's go, men.
This is Dick Tracy, protector of law and order.
We'll listen to today's Dick Tracy adventure in just a minute. 170 years ago today, there occurred an event that will always live in American history. It was on December 19th, 1777, that General George Washington took his army of 11,000 men to Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. From your history lessons, most of you know how the men suffered from the hunger and the cold, how they tied rags around their bleeding feet to protect them from ice and snow. In spite of difficulties, Washington and his poorly clothed army stayed at Valley Forge. There they were in a position to protect Congress from the British. The Continental Congress was then located at York, Pennsylvania. Although the men suffered horribly from the elements, they were turned into a well-drilled and disciplined army under the training of Baron Steuben. After 7 months, they entered Valley Forge. They were able to reoccupy the important city of Philadelphia, which had been in the hands of the British. Just think, boys and girls, 170 years ago today, the fate of our country, the United States of America, rested in the hands of General George Washington and an army of only 11,000 men.
And now, Dick Tracy.
Called to the Northwoods on a complaint by Cutter Down, wealthy lumber tycoon, that he was a victim of a frame-up, Dick Tracy and Pat Patton have now begun to feel that Cutter is himself the criminal. Going to an abandoned sawmill to get possession of a lease that Cutter Down is suspected of forging, they found the old safe had been recently broken open and its contents removed. They were about to leave the mill when Pat Patton saw an old-fashioned water wheel and decided to get inside it. But he had no sooner done this when the wheel began to turn, trapping Pat inside on a steadily speeding treadmill.
Dick, you've got to stop the wheel. I can't run any faster, and I can't get out through the smoke.
There's no way to shut off the water in time. I've got to try and jam the wheel. Get set, Pat. I'm going to shove this board into the smoke.
Okay, but hurry.
It's no use. The spokes shear off this board like matchwood. If I only had a pipe or a piece of metal.
I have, Tracy. Step aside.
What the? Where did you come from?
No time for that now. If he loses his footing and falls into the spokes, he'll be chewed to mincemeat. This rifle barrel may stop the wheel.
Try it. It's our only hope.
I don't think I can stop it, but I may be able to throw it enough for him to jump out.
Watch it, Pat. Jump when you think you can make it.
If I've got enough strength to jump... The barrel's starting to bend. I'll never get it any slower than this.
I'm afraid you're right. Pat, you'll have to try it now.
All right. Stand aside.
Well, what do you know? I made it.
Yeah, and as pretty a swan dive onto a wooden floor as I ever saw.
Oh, brother, look at that wheel spin now.
Oh, boy, it'd be just too bad if you were still in there. Well, mister, I guess we owe you quite a lot of thanks.
Green's the name. Horace Green.
I know. I recognize you. May I see that rifle?
Why not?
25-35, eh? This your only rifle?
It was my only rifle. The way the barrel's bent, it's only useful for shooting around corners now.
It is a little on the wavy side.
And now that I've got nothing to defend myself with, I suppose you'll be arresting me.
No, I think not.
What?
Say, let's get away from this infernal water wheel so that we can hear ourselves think.
Yeah, good idea. I don't want you to take pity on me just because I saved your pal's life.
Mister, you're barking up the wrong tree. That's the kind of thing I do. But Richard here doesn't know the meaning of the word pity when he's dealing with criminals.
You both misunderstand me. I'm acting strictly within the law.
Elucidate.
Well, Pat, our job was to arrest Forrest Green on a charge of misappropriating Christmas trees. But Cutter Down withdrew that charge.
Sure, but we've been deputized to find the killer of Pierre.
Quite so. But the local sheriff didn't name Forrest Green by name. No, he told us to capture a person or persons unknown who, by means of a .38 caliber bullet, did commit a homicide on the person of one Pierre the Trapper. As you can plainly see, Forrest Green isn't carrying a .38 caliber rifle.
Stated with all the finesse of a first-rate actor. You're picking up new tricks.
Maybe so, Pat, but it's also entirely legal. Nobody's actually sworn out a murder charge against Forrest Green. Until they do, we're under no obligation to arrest him.
Well, where's the hooker, Tracy? What do I have to do in return?
Tell me, Green, why are you so suspicious of everybody?
I think I've got a pretty good right to be suspicious. I'm the victim of one of the neatest frame-ups of all time.
And that's just why I'm not arresting you. I'm convinced that you really have been framed.
That sounds almost too good to be true. Outside of Piney and Mahogany, well, you're the first person who didn't think I was a double-dyed villain. You don't know what a boost it gives you to, well, to have someone believe in you.
Yes, I think I do. And I want to help you. But you have to help me.
Oh, our friend, I'd say he's helped us already. He certainly helped me anyway.
Well, I couldn't see you get chopped up in that wheel, and yet I knew that I'd have to ruin my rifle to save you. It was about the toughest decision I ever made. Tell me, do you know who opened the valve and let the water into the wheel?
No. I didn't trust you two, and I thought I'd follow you when you left Mahogany's and see what you were up to. And then all of a sudden, the wheel started to turn, and there wasn't time to go up and find out who opened the valve.
How far up the mountain is the valve located?
Ooh, about 200-300 yards. There's an old concrete dam up there, and the water's brought down through an old-fashioned wooden pipe. You can see the pipe coming down the mountain through an open end of the mill.
And the joker who turned on the water could see me get into the wheel through that same open end.
And he also undoubtedly saw Forrest Green come in and save you. So whoever it is we're fighting knows by now that we've teamed up with Forrest Green.
And when that news gets back to Cutter Down, I'll bet he loses 4 of his 5 remaining hairs.
You don't think, then, that it's Cutter who turned the water on?
No. No, Cutter would have lost his head and started shooting when he saw our scheme backfire. But this fella doesn't seem to enjoy being shot back at. He got out fast enough yesterday when you fellas threw a little lead in his direction.
And you have no idea who it could be?
Nope. It's not a real woodsman, which practically eliminates everyone but Owen Goh. And somehow I can't see old Budgethead as a crafty killer.
Well, we've got to find out who it is, and soon. Now, here's what I propose to do.
$100, $107, $134. That makes $186,000. Bad. Very bad. Let's see, that makes a deficit of almost...
That's this soliloquy that I seem to be disturbing.
Oh, I was just totaling up a few figures, and they aren't good.
They can wait. I want to talk about something really important.
This is important, Cutter. You're losing money, and you're losing it fast.
How far in the red am I?
$186,000 since last July. That was when you refinanced with that last big bank loan.
Yes, I know. Why are we doing so badly, Owen?
Poor production, mainly. You're not getting the stuff out fast enough. And that last log jam certainly didn't help.
It seemed like a good idea at the time. Forrest Green had to be eliminated from the scene, or I stood to lose a lot more than $186,000. I stood to lose everything.
Yes, but the jam didn't get rid of Forrest Green. And now he's teamed up with Tracy and Patton. Looks like you'll have to think up some scheme to get rid of all three of them.
Owen, that's what I came here to talk to you about.
Huh?
I have thought up several good schemes, and you've messed up every blessed one of them.
I've just had unusually bad luck lately.
Yes.
Could I help it if the log jumped over their heads? Or if that inferno Forrest Green had to turn up in time to save Patton from the water wheel?
Excuses! Seems to me that you're the most unskilled killer that I've ever had on the payroll.
I did get Pierre, remember?
Well, how could you miss with poor old Pierre standing out in the moonlight and me twisting his hound's tail and making him holler so you'd be sure and know where we were? And anyway, I told you not to kill Pierre, just to wing him.
Well, he made such a good target that I couldn't resist.
Oh, you make me sick. When I kill, it's something to be proud of. Take Axel Tree, for instance.
But he drowned accidentally when the log jam broke up.
Yes, that's what everybody thought. But you remember that it was Axel who caused the log jam on my orders, and I wanted to make sure that he didn't talk. And so when I got the chance, I drowned him with my own 2 hands as we fought in the icy waters.
You sound like a bad translation of a French epic poem.
I'd be a little careful how you talk to me, Owen. My record in homicide is slightly better than yours.
I suppose I ought to be terrified, but I'm not. And if you ever try to get me out of the way, you'd better be sure you succeed the first time.
Yes?
Yes. What I know about you would make really wonderful reading. How you killed old Beaver Hogany and forged the lease. How you set fire to the cabin and burned up Piney Wood's parents. And when Piney herself survived and grew up, how you tried to marry her.
Stop it, Owen. I've heard enough. And let me remind you of one thing. There was one other man who knew all those things.
That's right. Axel Tree.
Yes, and he's dead. And that leaves only you.
And when you're dead, there'll be no one who knows about it. No one.
That's always assuming that I don't get you first.
Oh, no, no. That's the beautiful part of it. I have everything to gain from your death, and so, eventually, I'll bring that about. But you have nothing to gain from mine, and that money-grubbing little soul of yours will force you to keep me alive in the hope that you can squeeze some blackmail out of me, which, of course, you can't. What a delightful situation.
Awfully smug. Awfully sure, aren't you?
That's right. And now suppose we drop this unhappy subject. I have no intention of eliminating you from the scene. Yet. You're far too useful to me. But only as a business manager, mind you.
You think you're smart?
I'm quite sure of it. Owen, my old and trusted friend, I am through fooling. Dick Tracy and Pat Patton and Forrest Green have arrived at the end of their respective trails because I am taking over.
I'm sure they'd be interested to know that.
No, Owen, they wouldn't. They wouldn't like to know what I have in store for them.
In a moment, we'll return to Dick Tracy. But first, kids, what does Saturday mean to you? Well, no school probably pops up in your mind first. And that's followed by fun. Everybody likes to have fun on Saturdays. Well, here's an extra special way to enjoy yourselves every Saturday morning. Just gather around that radio of yours and listen to the Abbott and Costello Kids Show. Now, here's a show that was designed just for you. With those famous comedians Abbott and Costello, up to all sorts of hilarious goings-on. Abbott and Costello conduct a whole bunch of contests on their Saturday morning fun fest. Why don't you see if you can outguess the contestants on the air? And in addition to this, you'll hear from many of your favorite stars of stage, screen, and radio. Stars like old Butch Jenkins and Margaret O'Brien. And here's the biggest feature of all of them. Each week, there'll be a Lou Costello Award of the Week. A $500 bond will go to the boy or girl who has performed the outstanding deed of the week. It sounds like a lot of excitement, doesn't it? Well, it is. Every Saturday morning, when the Abbott and Costello Kids Show gets underway, it means prizes and surprises galore. So be around your radio tomorrow morning and every Saturday morning for the Abbott and Costello Kids Show on most ABC stations. And now, back to Dick Tracy.
Dick, I wonder what Cutter Down's up to. He's been awful quiet lately.
Too quiet, Pat. He's up to something, and I don't like it. I think we'd better keep our eyes open.
And indeed they had, if they intend to catch him. Where will Cutter Down strike next? Better be sure to tune in Monday for the adventures of Dick Tracy. This is George Gunn speaking. Here's one story in which a $10 investment really paid off. It's the story of Lassie, the celebrated collie, star of ABC's Sunday afternoon series. Lassie was just an ordinary pooch called Pal until Rudd Weatherwax, the noted dog trainer, took over. Although he'd purchased Pal for only $10, he thought the dog could be groomed and trained for possible movie stardom. And eventually, Pal, or Lassie, was a movie star, rivaling the late Rin Tin Tin in popularity. On Lassie, the unique program written around the collie, you hear stories of a dog's courage and understanding. Don't miss Lassie every Sunday afternoon on most ABC stations. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
And now, Dick Tracy! This is Dick Tracy on the case of the poisonous timber. Stand by for action. Let's go, men. Yes, it's Dick Tracy, protector of law and order.
Before we listen to today's Dick Tracy adventure, did you boys and girls know that although yesterday was actually Cornelius McGillicuddy's 85th birthday, today is the day he's celebrating? And so is everybody else who loves baseball. Because Cornelius McGillicuddy is none other than Connie Mack, Mr. Baseball himself. You see, when the manager of that famous baseball team, the Philadelphia Athletics, was 75, he discovered that his birthday was really December 22nd. He decided that after celebrating December 23rd for 75 years, it was too late to change. Because of Mac's managerial ability, the A's are always a dangerous team. And no other baseball manager has won as many championships as Connie Mack. As a matter of fact, his teams were so great at times that people just wouldn't go to see them play. They knew the A's would win. And since baseball teams need money,
Connie Mack was forced to break up his teams two different times. You athletes will want to join in our salute to the man who started life working in a shoe factory at the age of 16 and who is still going strong as the grand old man of baseball, Connie Mack, 85 years young today. And now, Dick Tracy. Finally convinced of the complete innocence of Forrest Green, Dick Tracy and Pat Patton have teamed up with him in an attempt to trap the nefarious Cutter Down. Going to the scene of winter logging operations, Tracy extracts some valuable information from an obviously unfriendly lumber foreman. At this moment, however, Pat Patton arrives on the scene and, despite Tracy's shouts of warning, walks directly into the path of a falling tree.
Tree there fell right in them two
pillars. Yeah, sure did. Well, I guess we might as well take him out.
Hey, look, look. Right there. There's the one you was talking to.
Yeah.
He must have got out of the way.
Yeah, looks like it. Come on. Let's go over and talk to him again.
Yeah, sure. Most
obvious thing I ever seen in the world was that trail on the top of there. Hey there. It was kind of close. This must be your lucky day.
Lucky? I couldn't run fast enough to pull Pat out of the way.
You mean you couldn't run fast enough to get killed? You don't know when you're well off.
For heaven's sake, man, will you stop prattling and help me get Pat out of there?
Patience, mister, patience. All right, fellas. Get in there and bring out that body.
You're being a little premature, aren't you?
He's dead, all right. Gotta be. Big tree like that smack on top of him.
You don't know Pat. He's pulled out of more hopeless spots than this.
Yeah? Can't be any more hopeless than dead, mister. And that's what he is.
Hey, here he is. He's still breathing.
Yeah, what did I tell you?
He won't last long. Probably conk out any minute.
Let me look at him. No. No, it doesn't seem to be any bones broken. No, he was bracketed by these two limbs here, and he fell right between them. One of those little ones up there must have clipped him right on the head. Hey, help me get him out in the open.
Leave him alone, man. Don't touch him.
Say, what's the idea?
He's dead. Just hasn't got sense enough to stop breathing. My men aren't going to go carrying any steps around.
All right, then. I'm a special deputy sheriff, and I ask them in the name of the law to help me.
Mister, around these parts, Cutter Down's the law. What he says goes.
And does he also pass out the instructions for murder?
Friend, I don't like that. In fact, I don't like anything about you.
That's a matter of complete unconcern to me. But if you're looking for a fight, I'd suggest you put that axe down first.
You betcha. Day that I need an axe to kick the stuffings out of the toughest city fella that ever lived. That's the day I quit the lumber business.
Well, I hope you're well fixed financially because you've just resigned.
Well, you... fancy dinner. I'll show you. How do you like this kind of fighting?
It's a funny thing, but dirty fighters are always yellow.
Yeah?
I can't take a hard punch like this.
Are you...
Or this.
Hey, you see that? You see that? A city fella knocked out.
Now, do you, Phil, still think you can say uncle?
Oh, yeah? I'll show you who's yelling, you dirty goat.
You look better on the ground. Like that. You want to play some more?
All right. All right, don't hit me again. I've had enough.
Just like I said. Now, will you men help me take care of Pat?
Well, we sure will. Hey, come on. Brother, you certainly took care of that loudmouth, Joe. You know something? He's been talking so tough nobody around the camp had enough nerve to choose it.
I think he'll be a little subdued from here on in. Now, let's lift Pat and...
Nobody's lifting Pat. I am quite able to lift myself.
Pat, when did you wake up?
Just a few minutes ago.
Well, why didn't you say something?
I miss a good fight? I'd have never forgiven myself if I hadn't seen that. It sure was a beaut. Richard, you know something? I'm proud of you.
Thanks, Patrick.
Not at all. It was really wonderful. Every minute of it.
Oh.
But you know, I warned you before about needing with your right.
What?
If that guy'd been a little faster, he'd have nailed you.
Oh, Patrick, go back to sleep. You were funnier that way. Come on. Think you can walk all right?
Sure, why not? As you're so fond of pointing out, it was only my head that was hurt.
Let's go, then.
Right.
And, Joe!
Yeah?
I should have thought your mother would have warned you about playing games with strangers. So long, men. If you see Forest Green, be sure to get in touch with me.
Oh, Richard, I'm surprised at you. That wasn't a nice thing to do.
What?
Well, now those men will spend all their time looking for Forest Green instead of working like little beavers, cutting trees for that nice cutter down.
Well, that's really quite a shame, isn't it?
Hey, certainly.
Hey. Huh? Hey, I'm over here.
Well, bless my soul if it isn't the villainous Forest Green. Say, don't you know there's a price on your head?
Oh, really? Well, if the price is right, I'll sell.
You better hold out a little while longer. I understand all prices are going even higher.
Tracy, before I forget it, that was an elegant fight.
Oh,
you certainly put the chill on Joe Balsam, the terror of the lumber camps.
The terror of the... If that guy's the terror of the lumber camps, they're certainly easily frightened up here.
Well, it's like that other guy said. I've heard Joe threaten and bully and shout for years, but I can't ever recall seeing him actually fight before.
Well, he certainly picked a bad time for his coming out party.
Oh, he did it that. Now everyone in this part of the country will want to take a crack at him for some of the things he's made them swallow. Oh, but tell me, Dick, what did you find out?
Something pretty important. Cutter Down personally ordered those two trees cut, which wasn't very smart of him, because it's reasonably certain that there was something on those trees that he didn't want seen.
Yeah, if you ask me, it was pretty stupid. Would have been better for him to have blamed the marks on Forrest here. But you know what? I guess he got panicky.
Yeah, Cutter's like that. Loses his head when the screws start to tighten. He'd have been cooked long ago if he hadn't had Owen Doe to hold him down in the pinches.
Well, that'll give us a lead, then. What we've got to do is just to keep putting the pressure on him and keep him worrying until he breaks and does something really incriminating.
Yeah, I think you're right, Dick. Well, in the meantime, come on, let's go back to Mahogany's. Seems to me she said something about hot coffee when we got back.
Good idea, Pat. Well, wait a minute, Pat.
Hmm?
You've still got a vine or something clinging to you.
Word, what do you know? That's the luck of the Irish. Some people would have been killed when that tree fell on them, but I come out of it with vine leaves in my hair.
Yeah, but this vine happens to be poison ivy.
Well, it doesn't make any... Poison? Oh, I'm feeling a little faint, fellas. I don't think I'm long for this world.
But you have the luck of the Irish to protect you.
Oh.
So you have nothing to worry about. Nothing at all.
Boy, the days are certainly short. It's pitch black already.
Yeah, and it's snowing again, too. The lights of Mahogany's cabin up ahead are really welcome. I can taste that coffee already.
They're welcome for another reason, too. So give me a chance to look in the window first and see if she's alone.
That's a wise precaution.
There she is alone, reading. Oh, I wonder where Piney is.
Well, there's one way to find out.
Come in, boys. Come in. Be quick about it.
Where's Piney, Ma?
Well, she got nervous here without you, and so she went out for a little walk. Said she was gone up by the ridge.
Oh, I think I'll go look for her.
Yeah, that's a good idea. There'll be a moon in a few minutes. You better not waste it. You know, I thought that was real cute. So romantic-like.
Yeah, you're still young when you go looking for your girl before you've had a cup of coffee.
Mm, ain't it the truth? But you know, I was reading about this here Cleopatra. You know, she weren't much younger than me when she got in all that mess with Mark Antony.
No, I guess she wasn't.
And so I guess maybe there's hope for the old girl here yet, huh? Well, all the same, have some coffee, huh?
You talked me into it.
Did you say something?
Who?
I thought one of you fellas said something. Sounds like somebody outside. Could it be Forrest and Piney back so soon?
It wasn't by the door. It sounded as though it came from this side.
Hmm. A bear. Could smell it if it was a bear.
You mean to say you could tell if it was a bear outside just by the smell?
Why, sure thing. It smelled kind of hot and heavy. And I'm sure it's no deer. I can smell a deer a mile away if the wind's right. They smell sort of musky-like.
That's no animal. That's a person out there.
What's he doing around the back, then? Here, fetch me my horse pistol, son.
Never mind. I'll do any shooting that's required.
Look, there's something outside that window. I'd shine my light on it.
Good, Pat.
What? It's a man, all right. But what's the matter with him? He looks Oh, no. No, it can't be.
What's the matter?
It's not possible. It just can't be.
What can it be? Who is it?
It's Axel Tree.
In a moment, we'll return to Dick Tracy. But first, Christmas Eve, we invite you to join us when we present a dramatization of Charles Dickens' famous story, A Christmas Carol, in place of our regular Wednesday night program, Mayor of the Town. And as the star of the show, we'll bring you the mayor himself, Lionel Barrymore, in the role of Scrooge, characterization for which he is well known throughout the country. Scrooge is one of Barrymore's most distinguished portrayals, one known by more people, perhaps, than any other ever heard on the air. This will mark the 12th year Mr. Barrymore has played the role. And speaking of it, he has said, "There's something I feel of Scrooge at the moment I assume his character. I seem to shrink, and an unnatural meanness of disposition comes over me." A Christmas Carol is a story men, women, and children alike enjoy. A story your whole family will want to hear, for it's a story in the traditional Christmas tradition. A tale of a cold man whose heart is gladdened by the Yuletide and who learns the true meaning of giving and generosity. Tomorrow night, listen to Lionel Barrymore as Scrooge in A Christmas Carol of the most of these same ABC stations. Now, back to Dick Tracy.
Who did you say it was?
Axel Tree. But he's dead.
Who or what is the wild-eyed creature standing outside in the snow? Can it be Axel Tree? And if it is, will he be able to shed any light on the insidious operations of Cutter Down? Better be sure to tune in tomorrow for The Adventures of Dick Tracy. Written for radio by John Ray and Everett S. Crosby. And this is George Gunn speaking. The greatest music of the world, superbly interpreted by one of America's finest symphonic orchestras. The Boston Symphony, which we present every Tuesday evening over most ABC stations. As director of these weekly concerts, we bring you Serge Koussevitzky, who has been acclaimed both here and abroad for his fine conducting. In choosing selections for the Boston Symphony programs, Mr. Koussevitzky tries to include, during each season's broadcast, works by composers from many lands. Thus you hear the most memorable music of England, France, Russia, Czechoslovakia, Italy, Norway, Finland, and America. So be sure to listen to the Boston Symphony tonight on most ABC stations. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.